Number 1.
So back sometime in January of 2013, I was up late suffering from insomnia and watching Moonrise Kingdom. I live in Canada, and this particular night the temperature was holding steady in the single digits. It was probably around 2 or 3 degrees out, and the roads were like sheets of ice. The only thing I had to eat in the house were oyster crackers and ketchup, so I decided to pause the movie, bundle myself up tight, and brave the frigid wasteland outside to go get some snacks from the mini-mart a few miles away. After putting on several layers of clothing, I stepped outside, locked the door to my townhouse, and walked over to my car. It was so cold out, it actually hurt to breathe, and for a moment, I reconsidered going at all. But my hunger overpowered my discomfort, and I chiseled the ice off my windshield and climbed inside my car. I put the key in the ignition and started the car, and immediately turned on the heater but not the headlights. As I was waiting for the inside of the car to warm up, I noticed a red Cavalier drive past me down the street and pull into the driveway of the townhouse that was kitty-cornered from my own. Not having much to occupy my time as the car slowly warmed up, I watched as three people exited the Cavalier, and my heart immediately began to race, as I noticed one of the people in the car had his hands tied behind him. The man who had been in the back seat with the bound man immediately hit him with what looked like a tire iron, and the defenseless man collapsed into the snow. The tire iron man kept beating him, striking his legs and back, and I could see red patches of blood starting to stain the snow around the fallen man. For some context, this was some time after midnight, so there was no traffic or anyone else outside. The only light illuminating the street was coming from about 3 or 4 surrounding streetlights. I didn't recognize any of the men, but I faintly heard them shouting at each other, though I couldn't catch their exact words. The man who had been in the driver's seat came around the side of the car and pulled out a handgun from his jacket. I remembered actually shouting, "Oh shit!" before clamping my hands over my mouth. I was convinced that I was about to witness a murder, and I was terrified. There was no sense of excitement or grim fascination. This wasn't a movie. This was violent, unscripted reality, and I was suddenly feeling very traumatized. I didn't want to be a witness for what was possibly coming next. My car was on and running, but so was theirs, which was probably why they hadn't noticed me. I didn't dare try to sprint back inside, but I also didn't want to try my luck driving down the icy street, where they could have easily chased after me if they chose to. The driver bent down and put his gun to the head of the bleeding man. He remained in that position for a while, and I assumed he must have been talking to him. I began to let myself breathe easier, daring to hope they were just going to get back in the car and drive away without killing him. And then I could call him an ambulance. I had my cell phone in my pocket. Now, you might be asking, if I had a phone, why wasn't I calling the cops? Because this is Canada, and the cops just don't give a shit. I also didn't want to risk making any noise or giving my position away with the light of my cell phone screen. You may think this was cowardly of me, and maybe it was, but until you've been in this situation and there's a guy with a gun 50 yards away from you, I say you've got no right to judge. Anyway, this whole time the guy with the tire iron had just been standing there, no hat, no gloves, in the freezing cold, staring down at the bleeding man. When my car's engine suddenly stuttered, he glanced up and looked right towards me, and I swear I felt my heart stop. For a moment, he just stared in my direction, and I froze like a deer in the headlights, praying that he wouldn't see me. I'm a pretty scrawny guy, and wouldn't have had a chance of defending myself against this dude, even without the weapon. Suddenly, he began to make his way across the street towards me. Maybe he noticed the cloud of exhaust coming from my car, or he was just trying to get a better look. Either way, my fight or flight mode kicked in, and I wasn't going to wait for him to get closer. I killed the engine, leapt out of my car, without even shutting the door, and sprinted as fast as I could towards my front door, across the icy driveway. I heard the guy yell, "Hey!" And I was convinced that at any moment I would hear a gunshot, and suddenly I would hit the ground, bleeding out with the light starting to fade. But thank God, that never happened. I reached the front door and frantically stuffed the keys into the lock, As I turned the knob, I heard the tire iron guy curse and hit the ground. I guess he had slipped onto the ice, but I didn't turn to find out. Once inside, I slammed the door, locked it, and immediately barricaded myself in the guest bedroom, which only had one small window facing the backyard. I left all the lights off and just lie on the ground next to the bed, my heart racing, breathing heavily, expecting at any moment to hear pounding from the front door, but it never came. I lay there cowering for what felt like 20 minutes when I heard footsteps out in the hallway. I clamped my hands over my mouth to muffle my breathing and strained my ears for any sound from outside the bedroom door. I hadn't heard the front door open, but the soft, steady thudding of heavy feet coming down the carpeted hallway was clear. I told myself that as soon as I heard the doorknob jiggle, I was calling the cops on my cell phone and telling them that my house was on fire. That would get them here quick. After a moment, I thought I heard the footsteps in the living room again, and then nothing at all. I was convinced that the intruder was hiding somewhere in my own house, waiting for me to emerge so he could pounce on me. That was the absolute longest night of my life, and I waited wide awake and terrified, convinced that I was going to die. When the sun eventually came up, I finally found the courage to leave the bedroom. I picked up an empty wine bottle to defend myself as I walked down the hall carefully and peeked outside. There were two police cars parked outside my neighbor's yard, and the Cavalier was gone. I didn't recall hearing any gunshots. I walked into my kitchen to take a look around, and froze when I noticed my back door was unlocked. My heart sank as I noticed one word that had been carved into my wooden table: quiet. About an hour later, the cops knocked on my front door and informed me that there had been an assault last night. My neighbor was in the hospital and they asked me if I had seen anything. I lied and said I had passed out at midnight watching movies and had just woken up. That might have been a shit thing to do, but I didn't want to have my name be involved. Whoever these men had been, they were unstable and dangerous and knew where I lived. I didn't want to have to be dragged into court to testify against them. The police asked me if I knew my car door was slightly open. I said no, but simply shrugged and stated that I might have forgotten to slam it shut. They seemed to buy that and left, without any further questions. I threw out the table and got a new one, and have since put in a new security system. I'm not necessarily proud of how I acted that night, but I have no regrets either. Had I tried to be a hero, I might have been killed, so call me a coward if you want, but at least I'm alive. I've never made another attempt to go on a late night snack run ever since.
Number 2.
Here's some backstory about me. I lived in rural Kentucky my whole life. I'm 52 and currently semi-retired. I used to be a contractor, but suffered a nasty fall that rendered my left hip near useless. I'm on disability, but I do odd jobs in the local town, sell venison from deer I hunt, and help train younger contractors and give them advice. I try to keep myself busy. I have two with my ex-wife who are now in their late 20s, and one with my current wife who is turning 8 next month. My wife is Spanish, so my son looks fully Spanish even though he's half Caucasian. Everyone in town knows my name and my family, and knows I'm a good, humble family man. I personally helped build the house we're currently living in, and it's deep in the woods. The nearest neighbor is about 3 miles away. Last weekend, my 8-year-old son woke me and my wife at 2 in the morning. Jake is a sensitive kid, so the slightest bump in the night caused him to panic. We're used to this, but when he said there was a fire outside in the woods, I was struck with alarm. Half awake, I looked outside my bedroom window and noticed that in the distance, the night sky was glowing orange and there was smoke about 500 yards away from our house. My wife started to panic, picking up the phone and attempting to call the local fire department. I took the phone from her shaking hands and set it aside. I knew it wasn't a wildfire because the light and smoke came from a singular area. A wildfire would have spread by now. Since the woods we live near are very dense, this was a controlled fire, which in a way was far worse, and the fire department wouldn't be able to help. I threw on my hunting gear and rushed my wife and son to the basement. I handed her my cell phone and told her to call her brother. Right before I shut the door, I told her to lock it and to not open it up for anyone other than her brother or myself. I retrieved my bolt-action rifle. My intention was not to harm anyone, but rather only to scare them off. But ultimately, I knew that was a decision that they were going to make for me. I deadbolted the front door and left the house. My wife's brother had a key, but wouldn't arrive for at least 20 minutes. I ventured off in the almost complete darkness across my property, following the smell of smoke, the tinge of orange light in the sky, and the sound of the ever-increasing sermon being spewed. I get to the tree line that overlooks a clearing, and it's exactly what I expected. Clansmen. About 7 of them in a circle with their arms stretched out, while a smooth-talking preacher is spewing hate while using Christ as a justification. The preacher is standing in front of a makeshift cross as it continues to burn. I've had run-ins with the Klansmen before. Due to my property's relative seclusion, they tend to hold sermons in the woods surrounding my house. It only happens maybe twice a year, if not less. I usually fire a round off into the sky to tell them to back the fuck off, and they scatter. The preacher pauses for his followers to say amen and white power. That's when I shoot off a round into the sky, and all of them jump about 4 feet off the ground as I move towards the fire. You must be new. This is my property, and I don't appreciate these activities going on near my family. I loaded another bullet into the chamber and positioned my rifle near my right hip, not taking aim or showing hostility. While the other followers slowly stepped back, their preacher steps forward, coming within 30 yards of me. This is your property? He said with a thick Kentucky accent. Ma, I apologize. We scouted the area during the day and didn't see a single house around here. Do you mind telling us where you live? Just so we can meet further away from you and your family. I don't answer. This preacher's silver tongue may have been able to work on his flock of sheep, but it wasn't going to work on me. There was a tense silence between us before one of his sheep spoke up. I know this guy. He's married to a fucking spick. He even has a half-breed with her. The other sheep began grumbling amongst themselves and moved closer towards me. I made a quick jerk with my rifle, raising it up below my shoulder to force them to back away. The preacher chuckled to himself before speaking.
So that's why you don't want to tell us where you live. You think we're going to break in and harm your family. Good sir, we may hate your wife and child, but we ain't no savages.
You may not be, but I don't trust your friends, I said bluntly. I kept my rifle high, not aiming it at anyone directly, but positioning it at the ready in case I had to.
You can't choose who you love after all,
the preacher said. I bet he was sporting a shit-eating grin under his hood while saying that.
You have my word that we will never lay a hand on you and your family. Perhaps we can arrange a deal.
My stomach dropped, and my trigger hand trembled slightly. A vague threat was still a threat.
You don't bring this up with law enforcement or anyone else, and we'll relocate our get-togethers further away from your family. How I see it, you don't have much of a choice. You already fired one shot. Do you think you can take all 8 of us out with a bolt action? My friend, that simply isn't possible.
I remained silent. I took a moment to breathe so I could make my voice remain strong and firm, even though my legs were beginning to shake and my palms were incredibly sweaty. Another 700 yards further into the woods, there's another clearing. If you hold your meetings there from now on, I won't acknowledge what you do. But if you ever come near me again, I'll bring more than a bolt action with me. Understand?
My friend, you have yourself a deal.
He offered his hand out to shake, but I stared him down right past the slits in his hood, rifle still raised below my shoulder. I didn't accept his hand.
Very well. We will be on our way to check out this promising area. You can head on home now. Just be sure to tuck Jake in tight. This must have been just a dreadful experience for the poor boy.
I stood dead still in total shock. My vision begins to blur as the preacher and his flock of sheep moved towards the location I pointed them to. Part of me wasn't surprised, since I worked in the community my entire life. The other part of me was in panic mode. If he knew my son, he knew where I lived. I often held local events at my home. This gathering was not a coincidence. It was a warning. A threat. I got a hold of myself and moved slowly back into the tree line, watching as their white robes faded into the darkness of the night. I hobbled as quickly as I could back to my home, looking over my shoulder whenever I heard a twig snap or the wind rustle the trees. When I finally made it back, I breathed a sigh of relief and let my wife's brother know what happened. I didn't tell my wife. If she knew, she would have never gotten a good night's sleep in that house again. My wife's brother slept in the guest bedroom in the basement. We took turns keeping guard during the night, and there wasn't a single sign of their return. But I'm still on high alert, even during the day, and especially when I go into town. So far, they have apparently kept their word. Right now, as I write this, I see the sky turning orange and the smoke starting to rise in the distance. It's far enough away to indicate that they're using the clearing I recommended. I just wish they weren't there to begin with.
Number 3.
A year ago, I was 28, living in a condo in southern Arizona. I'm a single parent and live with my three children and my dog, a Belgian shepherd named Loki. The neighborhood that we lived in was very quiet and friendly. My children would often play outside with the neighbor kids on a daily basis, and I didn't have to watch them like a hawk. Plus, my neighbor worked in his garage all day and was able to keep an eye on the kids as well. One fall night last year, I was doing my usual chores, vacuuming, cleaning the rooms, and washing the clothes. I wanted to do as much as I could before the kids came back from their grandparents' house the next morning. I had a sliding glass door in my bedroom that I usually left open halfway, so that it would be easier for me to go back and forth to the garage where the washing machine was. Loki also loved to have it open because it was an easy access for him to run back and forth, inside and outside. I went through my sliding glass door and opened the garage, and when I was putting the lid back down, I turned around and saw Loki growling with his eyes fixed on the roof. I looked up to see what he was growling at, but I didn't see anything. Figuring that it was only a stray cat, I started walking back into the house and was about to slide the door shut behind me when I noticed Loki hadn't moved and was still out in the alley. I normally didn't have to call him. He usually just followed me. I called for him, but he didn't so much as look my way. He was sitting still, looking up at the roof as if he were waiting for something to appear. Then suddenly, he jumped up and started snarling and barking viciously at the roof. At the same time, I heard heavy thumps moving across my roof over my head. That was frightening enough, but what scared me the most was the way Loki reacted. I had only ever seen him act like that once before, and that was almost when I got robbed when I was stationed back in Washington years earlier. I quickly pulled Loki inside and shut the door, very shaken, pacing back and forth and crying and growling. I texted one of my neighbors and asked if he could please swing by my house. I didn't feel confident in my suspicions enough to call the police. When my neighbor arrived, he physically climbed up on the roof and didn't find anything. We concluded that it was just probably a cat, but I couldn't shake the gut feeling that those thumps across the roof sounded far too heavy to be made by a cat. A few days go by, and I didn't hear anything more, so I almost forgot about it. Then the next morning comes, and before it was fully light out, I was awake and brushing my daughter's hair and getting her ready for school, when I heard loud footsteps across my roof. I got my old military machete from under my bed and ran out back with Loki. There was nothing. I circled around to the front. Nothing. I went inside to reassure my daughter that it was probably a cat. She looked at me with wide, terrified eyes and said, "It sounded like someone was running." Later that day, when I came home from work, I saw police cars down the street at my neighbor Colleen's house with an ambulance. Colleen was a very sweet, older and fragile lady. I eventually found out that someone had broken into her house while she was napping, and Colleen apparently startled the assailant, and he had shoved her into the wall and broken her hip. Colleen lay upon the ground in pain, unable to move until her daughter came to check on her. The police officer started questioning the rest of us, asking us if we had seen or heard anything suspicious lately. I immediately told the officers everything about the footsteps on my roof and how Loki had reacted. In response, the police had officers patrol our neighborhood for about a week. I told my daughters what was going on and explained to them that they couldn't play outside as freely as they were used to for a while. 2 weeks passed and I was still on guard. It was late one night and I needed to do some laundry, and I decided that I wasn't going to let my nerves prevent me from getting my parental chores done. So I had my glass door open and ready. On the very last load, I was walking towards the garage. I paused dead on my tracks and didn't move, barely breathing. Try not to make a sound. Then I heard another creak. I slowly looked up and finally realized where it was coming from. Directly above me. My heart sank and my blood went cold. And I know the feeling of being watched wasn't just my imagination. Suddenly, Loki was by my side. He snarled and barked viciously while trying to jump up on his hind legs. I dropped my basket and ran back inside. Just as I made to close the door, I screamed for Loki to come. He came running inside, and I immediately locked the door. Barely after a moment I did, I saw a shadowy figure jump down from my roof. My oldest daughter came in, and I told her to get my phone and take her siblings into her bedroom and call 911. Loki was barking furiously and foaming at the mouth, desperately wanting to get at this motherfucker. I was absolutely terrified and shaking uncontrollably. The figure was still standing there in my backyard, not moving, and I was unable to take my eyes off him. I had been to war and seen terrible things, but when my children were now suddenly in the crossfire, this shit felt different. The strange man literally walked directly up to me, outside through the glass window, and started glaring at me with fire in his eyes, as if I had just rear-ended his car. He was wearing a hooded sweatshirt and held a crowbar in his hand. I remembered my machete was right next to me, by the nightstand, but I didn't want the man to know that I had it yet. If he tried to break in, I wanted to be able to give him the surprise of his life. He jiggled the handle to try to open the door, then hit the door with the crowbar, but it didn't shatter. My kids were yelling hysterically as he started hitting the door harder and harder. Loki was enraged and leaning up against the glass, putting his own weight on it. I realized that this guy had every intention of coming in, so I grabbed my machete and yelled,
"Come on, motherfucker!"
The shock in his eyes was a glorious sight. A police officer jumped my fence and started shouting at him. When the guy didn't drop the crowbar, the cop tased him. As the officer put him in cuffs, I went to go get my kids, and when they saw me, they came running and started hugging me tight. The would-be home invader was charged and sent to prison. My kids are still going to therapy. I'm doing whatever I can to help them cope with everything. Loki is still with us, and we love him very much. If I ever see that guy again, I'm not going to hold back. Everyone keeps telling me how lucky I was, and I agree. But I always remind him that that guy was even more lucky he didn't break in through the glass and had to have dealt with me.
There's always a reason to be afraid.